So he's a priest recruiter, and Father Uncle Sam wants you.
Absolutely. And goarmy.com/chaplains. Be a priest, be a soldier, be all you can be.
Yeah.
Uncle Sam wants you, Chris, to be the source and summit of your life.
Wow. Right?
Yes.
I haven't slept in 4 days.
So good. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. And yes, I say ladies because we do have like a third of our audience now, at least on YouTube, is female.
There's thousands of them, Paul.
Yes, yes. There are
like
literally
gremlins.
I was going to say
this is
tens.
Not for you. This is not for you.
Tens of listeners are ladies out
the
there.
More we say it's not for them, they keep coming. So don't listen if you're a woman.
Stop
this
it.
Is all the man
Stop
secrets.
Welcome to the Beatitudes, a podcast for Christian men and a growing number of Christian women who are seeking to grow in holiness as they walk together in authentic fraternity, pursuing the Trinity for eternity. And my name is Paul Kolker. I'm one of the hosts and founders. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts and bro-hosts, Nicholas Besner.
What's going on?
And Jeff Schleifelbein.
Howdy doody.
Schleifelbein.
Schleifelbein. I don't know. It's German for yeah. So cool.
Sehr gut. And we had a phenomenal episode on Monday. Go back and watch if you missed it, because it is well worth a listen. But we're joined again today by Father Peter Pomposello. Welcome back.
Beatitudes.
Yeah.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Oh, it's so good. We need to record that, and we need to have that be one of our stingers for...
What the one really good there, Father?
No.
I'm from the Bronx, sir.
No.
Wow.
That doesn't I'll beat you up.
You emigrated from Austria.
Yeah. I'll beat you up.
Forget Tell about us. It.
It's like
I try to fit in, Father.
No, you just swing for the fences, no matter where you are, whether it's appropriate or not.
If you swing 1,000 times a day, you'll hit something.
That is how batting averages work. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, Father Peter, we learned so much about you, about the chaplaincy, about the archdiocese for the military services, not of the
Nailed
military
it, right?
services. And we had some fun, but we also went deep last time. We just want to get to know you a little better on this episode. So what was it for you? You mentioned about kind of discernment at the end of the last episode and surrendering, listening to God's call. How did God pull you in this very particular special direction with both the overlap of priesthood and military service? What was that like for
Kicking
you?
Kicking and screaming. Kicking and screaming.
The autobiography.
I thought about being a priest when I was in high school. I went to public school K-8 and then Catholic high school. And I think it was freshman year of Catholic high school. I was attracted to the idea of being a priest, but I just dismissed it kind of like right away. Like I couldn't do that. Who could do that? I can't do that. And then my attraction went to the brothers that taught me and their sense of community with each other. Mm. The Irish Christian Brothers that I had at Monsignor Farrell High School in Staten Island, I just admired the whole idea of how they worked together and how they socialized together. I remember distinctly in my freshman classroom, it was early in the morning, and one of the brothers poked his head in to ask the other brother, he's like, hey, you in for dinner tonight? And he's like, yeah, no, I should be around. And he was like, okay. And then he left. And I'm like, I was, you know, maybe, what was I, 12, 13 years old. And this was my first experience of adults that lived together and worked together that weren't married to each other. Mm. Like, it's like, what is this community thing that they're doing? And I was like, why? Like, that's really cool. Yeah. And I was very much attracted to that and thought about the brothers, thought about a vocation to the brothers. And I rationalized that one away. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I said, but maybe I could be a school teacher. And fast forward after, you know, all sorts of twists and turns with college and all that, I wound up becoming a school teacher. I had hoped to be an active duty infantry officer. I was an ROTC student and I got commissioned, but it was at the end of the first Gulf War. So there was really no opportunity to serve on active duty. And I became a public school teacher in New York City. And I was teaching public school. It was a great time because I was teaching computers at a time where nobody had a computer in their house. Nobody knew what the internet was just starting to dawn. I mean, it was just starting to come about. And I was the guy like saying, like, no, this is going to be big. This isn't. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I could just turn on the TV and get sports scores. Like, why do I need the internet? I'm like, no. Like, they're going to fix this. You're going to be able to buy stuff on this. Like, how's this going to be a vending machine? Like, how's this thing going to work? So it was really an exciting time to be in tech at that time. And I was not living my faith, though. I really wasn't. I had kind of fallen away through high school and college. I was barely going to Mass on Christmas and Easter kind of thing. I never really gave up on prayer completely. And I did pray haphazardly, you know, grace before meals most of the time, maybe. But I really wasn't going to church at all. To the point where, as a school teacher, I was off for the summer. And I took some adventures. I had 2 months off, and I'm like, I'm not gonna work. I'm gonna like take my time and do something cool. So I rode a bicycle from New York to Los Angeles. I rode a bicycle from London to Dover, and then took the hovercraft across to France. And then I toured all of Europe, France and Belgium and Germany, Italy, Spain. It was great. But that's where I became convicted. I think that's where it all turned on me. I remember going to visit these beautiful churches in Europe, and I felt so convicted. I felt embarrassed. And it was a strange thing to be embarrassed in this crowd of tourists. Nobody knows who I am. Nobody's looking at me. And I was mortified. I was so embarrassed. I'm like, I belong here, and I don't go here at all anymore. I'm a tourist in the church. Like, I became that convicted, like, in a moment.
Like a tourist, like, in your own home.
Yeah. I'm like, what am I doing here? Like,
that phrase is awesome. I belong here.
I did.
Because you know you belong.
I knew
there,
that.
And that's the embarrassment
it.
Because you separated. And I know this feeling. So I belong. That's where I belong.
Right. It was almost as embarrassing as if you just, like, if I had blown off calling or visiting my parents for years, and then I just, like, showed up, and they're sitting there smiling at me at the front door, and I'm like, what have I done? Like, what, you know, where have I been? And it was really embarrassing. It was awful. And by the grace of the Holy Spirit, I made a really good, you know, firm purpose of amendment, and I went to confession, and I committed myself. I'm going to Mass on Sunday. Like, I'm going to confession, and I'm going to live a sacramental life. And so I did. And for about a year, I was going to Mass on Sunday, and I'm saying my prayers. And then I got drawn even deeper. You know, why does God do this? Like, you know, it's not like, wasn't that enough? Like, come on, aren't we done? But no. So God then puts it on my heart to have a conversation with my parents. Now, my parents were daily Mass goers. My sister was a daily Mass goer. And we were just talking about church and prayer. And I knew that they were daily communicants. And I'm listening to it, and I'd been going to church faithfully for a year now. Like, I'm kind of coming to take my faith more seriously. But then I went home that night, and I said, like, why don't I go to daily Mass? I'm like, oh no, wait a minute. Now I'm thinking way too hard. I'm not doing that. Like, little old ladies go to daily Mass. I'm not gonna go to daily Mass. And I'm like, well, why not? And that was just, that just sat with me. Like, why not? Why? I'm like, okay. All right, I'll go for the summer. I'm going for the summer, and then when school starts, we're done with this. I'm not gonna do this again. I got my life to live. I'm just, you know, 26, 27 years old. But he never really let go, and he never let go of me. And that's the best way to. It's not like I didn't let go of him. He didn't let go of me. And I'm going to daily Mass, and in the context of all of this, I met a young lady. Met a young woman. She was a nurse. And I fell in love with her. And I'm like, wow, Lord, like, you've really blessed me. Like, look at this. Like, and she was really and truly like the first, I mean, absolutely, like, I was seriously thinking about, like, wow, I could see myself with her as a husband, a father, like, wow. And then this all takes a hard turn. About 6 months after we're getting serious, and I'm at daily Mass. And it's during the consecration, and there I am kneeling in the basement church of Our Lady Queen of Peace on Newdorp Lane in Staten Island, and I'm looking at the priest raising the Eucharist, and I just said, oh, no, we're not doing this. No, you're thinking too hard. No! And I just, and the question now was, why don't you become a priest?
Yeah.
Because I want to get married and have kids. Why don't you become a priest? Because I can't do that. Why don't you become a priest? And I'm like, oh, this is just awful. So I didn't know what do I do with this question? So I talked to my priest about it, and I talked to several priests. I got some awesome advice. I had God bless Father Brady. He down in where I met my girlfriend at the time. I met her in the context of church. I was helping out at the parish in the summer, and so he knew me and he knew her. And he kind of calmed me down. He was like, listen, you know, it's not uncommon for a young man like yourself. You take your faith seriously. You're on the edge of a vocation to get married. It's not uncommon for, you know, you think about the priesthood as well. Pray on it. God's going to let you know where to go and what to do with this. I heard, pray on it and it'll go away. But I did have the courage. He gave me the courage, and I owed it to Dawn. I owed it to her to share this with her. And I'm like, you know, I'm thinking. I couldn't even say like priest. I was like, I'm thinking about going to seminary. And she was like, you know, she gets upset, and I got upset too. But then she says, I could see you becoming a priest. I'm like, I don't want to hear this from you. Like, what? And like, and she said, well, you know. What does this mean? Like, are we done? Like, are we breaking? I'm like, no. And I don't know. But if you're willing to, like, let me figure this out, like, I don't want to break up with you. And she gave me such a gift. She really did. She gave me such a gift by saying, by recognizing how much I loved her and how I was being completely honest with her. I'm like, I'm not playing games here. This isn't my, like, my exit, like, you know, like, it's like, it's not you, it's me. It's like, oh, I want to be a priest. Like, we can't do this, you know, and I'm going to, like, exit over here. She knew I was being authentic about it. So she said, until you really know, then, I mean, like, well, let's, you know, I'll be here and we'll figure this out. But as soon as you know, you got to tell me. Well, then we fast forward. About 6 months later, it's Pentecost Sunday. And I had gone to church that morning, and she had things to do. She lived in Jersey. I lived in Staten Island. She had things to do, and I said, "Well, I'll meet you. You know, I'll meet you in the evening. We'll have dinner, and you know, we'll watch a movie or whatever." And I had gone to, but I had gone to Mass, and I go home and I look at the Catholic newspaper on my kitchen table, and they had just had ordinations the day before. And these young priests were saying Mass for the very first time in their lives. And one guy is saying his very first Mass for the first time, 10 minutes from where I live. I'm like, well, I just went to Mass. I'm not going to Mass again. And I'm like, oh, man, well, I got to go see this. I mean, let me just. So I grab my car keys. I go there, sat in the back of the church. And if you've never been to a first Mass, you got to go to a first Mass. Your listeners need to know that they got to go to a first Mass. You have to do this at least once in your life. It's the most beautiful celebration you'll ever see, where this man who's given himself to Christ as his priest, he's there surrounded by family, friends, all the priests in his life that encouraged him and educated him. And it's like just it's a wedding on like to the max. It's awesome. It's like a wedding kind of celebration. And I sat in the back of this packed church, Holy Child in Staten Island. I sat all the way in the back, and I just kept my head down. And I remember I kept my head down. I'm like, if I just keep my head down this way so that the tears are going to come right off my eyeballs and not go down my face, because I don't know what to do here. And I was just a mess, and I'm just making this puddle between my knees. And I'm
tear
like,
strategy.
This is awful, awful. And then I knew. And I went down there, and I just – and she knew. It was crazy. She knew the minute – that I opened the door, she looked at me, and she just started yelling at me. She's like, you're not doing this today. And I'm like, I didn't even say anything. She goes, you're not doing this to me today. My sister, my twin sister, is getting married on Saturday. You are not doing this to me today.
Wow.
And I was like, I couldn't believe that she knew it. I said, I can't go to this wedding. I said, you know I love you. Trust me. Trust me, I can't go to this wedding with you. You're thinking about being the bride. I'm thinking about being the priest. No, like I can't.
Wow.
We can't do this.
Wow.
Like I got just trust me on this. So fast forward, you know, I leave, I get out of there, and she made me promise her. She said, "You got to promise me to let me know that you got that you got accepted to the seminary. Just like whatever this process is, I know you're going to leave me alone. I know we got all right, great. So I don't talk to her for, you know, it's like maybe 4 months later, I finally get accepted. And I call her back and I said, you know, I said, how you doing? And I said, you know, oh, she goes, did you get accepted? I said, yeah. I said, are you okay? And she goes, no, I mean, but I will tell you this. I'm so glad you weren't at that wedding. I had a great time and I'm glad you weren't there. And then fast forward, I think it was like maybe 10 years after that, that I you know, she went on to get married and find, yeah. God loved Dawn so much. He loved her so much that he saved Dawn from me by taking me to himself and sending her a better guy.
Do you still have a contact with Dawn? Or
no.
Okay.
No.
Well, God bless her. That's awesome.
Yeah. And even that contact was a chance. 10 years later, I ran into her mom.
Yeah.
By chance. And we got to talk. And that's how I found out, cool. Like, you know, married and two little boys and all the rest of it.
It's awesome.
I love it. You, that's an incredible story.
Yeah. Wow.
You've got fatigues on. How did that? You went from teaching public school in New York to becoming, how did you get into the military services part of this?
Well, so I owed an obligation to the military from college. I was an ROTC student. I had a scholarship. I thought I was going active duty and couldn't do it full time, but the Army said no.
Yep.
So I taught and I was a reservist and I was drilling down at Fort Dix, New Jersey, and all of that was happening, all that's kind of going on concurrently. I get to the point where I apply for seminary and I'm still in uniform. I had 2 years left. And they're like, okay, yeah, you know, you can finish your obligation. And I said, I'd like to think about becoming a chaplain candidate and I'd like to, you know, do this for the military. And they, yeah, sure, you know, we can consider that. You know, we'll walk with you on that decision. And it looked like it was going in that direction. And it would have been fine under my first archbishop would have been Archbishop Cardinal O'Connor, and he was all about that. He was a former Navy chaplain himself. But he passed away when I was in seminary. And then who would become my ordaining bishop, Cardinal Egan, he didn't want to know anything about it. He was like, no, I need you here. This is where – and I said, okay. Like, that's, I guess that's it.
Sure.
And I served 10 years. I wasn't getting any younger. And then he retired.
Yeah.
And that was my chance to, like, hey, I was about 45 years old at the time, and I said, listen, so I'm not getting any younger, and I approached Cardinal Dolan, and he said yes. He's like, go. They need priests. Yeah.
That's, you know, cool. And you keep saying you're not getting any younger, but somehow you look 35, so no, I'm not sure how this story works.
Oh, I'll say that again to my sister Christine. She hates it when people say that.
So you have to, like, meet with Cardinal Dolan and say, this is what I'm trying to do. Like, how does that actually, the process work?
Oh, it's very good. So it was Feast of St. Rita, and I went to visit with him. And I know, and I'm very grateful to my first pastor, who's now the Bishop of the Diocese of Camden, Bishop Dennis Sullivan. I'm sure he prepped the battlefield for me and let him know, like, why I was coming to visit him and ask for permission. And so I made it my business to get his buy-in first. Yeah. I wasn't going to go behind his back. I wasn't going to do any kind of investigating, like, what's this like? If he was good with it, then I'll do the legwork and the application. But if he said, no, you know, if he'd said, hey, Father Pete, I need you here, then, well, that would have been the end of it.
It's obedience, sure.
But he said yes. And so it took about a year after. I took a year to do the application because I wanted to give him my sixth year as a pastor. I was a pastor of Holy Cross in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wanted to give him that. And he was grateful. He was like, oh, good. You know, like, you're not leaving tomorrow. And so then I applied. And it's an application to the church and to the Army at the same time. The church vets you spiritually, so to speak, through the archdiocese for the military services. And then the Army has to look at everything, you know, dental and eye and blood work and security background checks. All of that comes together, and a year later, I left. And I've been on the road now 10 years, 3 years in Alaska as a paratrooper. I loved it as a chaplain and a paratrooper in Alaska, and then...
Like, if you're going to jump out, don't jump out into frozen tundra.
Oh, it's pretty awesome, though.
Wow. It's, you have skis really on?
Dude,
you land?
Dude, snowshoes? Mountains.
Snowshoes?
Yeah. Snowshoes.
Yeah, that kind of sounds awesome.
Wow, yeah, it sounds very James Bond.
Yeah. No, thank you. Yeah, no, it's just wonderful. And snow jumps are great. Like, when you got deep snow, it's like... Like, how are you going to get hurt in this? This is like, you know, this is a kid's fantasy. Ooh, yes, no angels on the ground.
Incredible.
Totally. So 3 years in Alaska, then I got picked up to go to a unit in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And that's where I did all of my deployments to date. I did 5 deployments. I was on a schedule. It was kind of beautiful that they worked it so that I would be the priest to go and support units in theater for Christmas and Easter. Mm. And I did Christmas, Easter, Christmas, Easter, Christmas, and then COVID hit. And I didn't deploy for that Easter of COVID. And then I left that unit. I went to another infantry unit. And then I got charged with this job that I do now. I'm a priest recruiter. I recruit priests and seminarians for
the
Army.
And do you teach cartography? Because you talked about going like New York to L.A., and this is in the 90s. Like, there's no Google Maps.
Oh,
like,
wow. Oh, well, let's talk about that. That's fun. So, yeah, I had no GPS. No, I mean, nothing.
And then all over Europe, too.
Yes. So I would literally go to a gas station. Like, remember this stuff, right? You used to buy, like, the map at the local gas station.
Yeah.
And I would ride to the edge of the state map. And then I would go to the post office. I mailed it home because I wanted it as a keepsake.
Sure. Yes.
And then I'd buy the next map. And I just worked one state at a time, and I just kept going.
Amazing.
And, I mean, that's literally what
I'm
I did.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
Yeah, no. I mean, I was on the edge of technology, though, because I did the first... My first bike tour was 93 and 94. So 93, I did Europe. And I was writing for my local newspaper. I was writing the travel article, the Sunday travel feature. And I had photographs in the travel feature. And what I did, and this is how old I am, I would get on the phone. I would call collect from Europe, from a payphone. I'd call collect to the newspaper. They'd put me through to an intern. And I would dictate over the phone my article. And the intern would type in my article, and then they would send a FedEx truck or a DHL truck to come pick up my rolls of film that I had.
Amazing.
They'd FedEx the film back home. They'd develop it, and then 2 days later, I would call and talk to the photo editor, and he'd say, "Hey, I see you. Like, I see a picture of you with your bicycle, and these women look like Swiss Miss, and there's something." I was like, "Yeah. I got notes
chocolate.
For that," and I would tell them where I was.
Chocolate, you know, hot chocolate.
There it is. But I would give them. I would be able to help him write the captions
That's
for the photography.
Wild.
Wow!
Did you ever in Alaska, like it's the bay door opens, it gets real loud. There's this rush wind, and you say, "Son, when's the last time you went to confession?" Like right before you jump. Did you ever do any of that kind of stuff?
You know what would happen a lot.
Right now.
At the end of it all, like, you know, everybody jumps and everybody's like, and everybody's just feeling good that, like, you know, oh, it all worked out well and all that. Though more often, so often, I should say, is the soldiers would approach me and be like, "Hey, chaplain, that was a great day with you. Hey, you know what? I'm getting married. Will you do my wedding? You know, like I had a great day with you." And I would never ask the question, like, "Are you Catholic? Is she Catholic?" Like, I would just say, "Hey, is she in town? Like, let me take you guys out to dinner."
Yes.
And then we'd just chat. And then I find out I'm talking to 2 Baptists, which is awesome. That's fine. And then I'd have to, like, let them down easily. Like, "Listen, I can get you to a chaplain who can do the wedding. Yeah. I can't do it. I'm a Catholic priest." But then, and then what do? I wind up doing Catholic pre-cana for the whole dinner.
Yeah.
That's
well,
awesome.
What a witness.
Right.
Every part of your story, I think, is another story. Because I also think of when you were talking about doing all the holiday stuff, it just sounds like a bad kids game. Like, Christmas, Easter, COVID! Like, and then you got to run from the person before they tag you. Oh my goodness. Father, reminder for people who didn't catch the Monday show or want to follow up, how do people stay in touch with you with all the work that
you're
doing?
So come follow the work of my team on Instagram. We have a good presence on Instagram, fr.unclesam. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, but mostly on Instagram. You want to contact me, you can DM me there, or you could email me at priestrecruitereast@gmail.com.
So he's a priest recruiter, and Father Uncle Sam wants you.
Absolutely. And goarmy.com/chaplains. Be a priest, be a soldier, be all you can be.
Yeah.
Uncle Sam wants you, Chris, to be the source and summit of your life.
Wow. Right? Yes.
I haven't slept in 4 days.
So good. You are punishing it. Right now.
Hey, to be out of dudes, I got to thank you. I got to thank you for being on the recruiting team and getting me on this
yeah,
episode. Thank
absolutely.
You so much.
No, thank you for joining us.
Awesome. Thank
yeah.
you very
You're
much.
Need an assistant with all the influx of new recruits coming your way. How many languages do you speak, Father?
I manage with English and a little bit of Spanish.
Let's hear a Spanish blessing, and then we'll call it a day. How's that?
Oh.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Lord, what are you doing to me? Because I don't get too much.
Instantly.
Oh,
yeah.
Let's El do Señor esté con ustedes.
Y con tu espíritu.
Dios Todopoderoso, Padre, Hijo, Espíritu Santo, desciende sobre ustedes. Amen. Amen. Amen.
All right, we'll see you around the globe, Father. Good luck and Godspeed with all the recruiting and bringing people to the source and the summit of our faith in the Eucharist.
Thank you so much, and thanks for your apostolate here as the Beatitudes.
Thank you so
much.
Nobody
can say it better than that. For the rest of you, we will
see you in the Eucharist.
God bless us, everyone. I got Tiny Tim there.
Yep. Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to join us at our undersized table, subscribe to the video version of the show on YouTube by typing at, that's the symbol at, so shift and two on your keyboard, at the _ Beatitudes on YouTube. We'll see you there.
This podcast is part of the Spoke Street Network. For more great podcasts, visit SpokeStreet.com.